We now go live to the Montreal Canadiens preseason fan fest, featuring a very special guest addressing the season ticket holders. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States of America, Donald Trump.
Mr. Trump, Tony from LaSalle, could you give us your thoughts on David Schlemko as one of the possible replacements for fan favorite Andrei Markov?
He's sweating like a pig. I never saw a guy sweat like this. The sweat is pouring down.
Mr. President, Patrick from Quebec City, how long is Marc Bergevin going to be our general manager?
Doing a spectacular job in Canada. Everybody loves him, and they love him for a reason, so congratulations on the job you're doing.
Hi, Mr. Trump. I'm Peter from NDG. Is the possibility of the Quebec Nordiques returning to the NHL a good thing for the Montreal Canadiens?
Why not? Come in. Come on in. We're stupid. We'll take care of you. We'll pay.
They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
Yes, Mr. Trump. Simon from Laval, how should we as fans feel that Philip Dano and Thomas Plekanec are going to start the season as our team's number one and number two centers?
We need a leader that wrote the art of the deal.
I said trade deals. Who would do better? I know.
I'll tell you what. You're going to put this on television, but you don't even know what you're talking about.
And we have people that are babies. It's like a chess player, grandmaster, playing against a checkers child.
One day you're going to have to explain to me why Donald Trump, with his really busy schedule these days, found the time to visit a Montreal fan fest. You're going to have to explain that to me.
Well, maybe Mar-a-Lago was booked for the weekend or something like that.
Hey, man, Hurricane Harvey. Tough times right now in the U.S. Tough times.
Yeah, very tough times. And a lot of athletes are supporting it with donations, so that's a good thing to see.
That's amazing. I love seeing that, by the way, where sports transcends real life and becomes like this catalyst for change.
Oh, it's outstanding. Listen, President Donald Trump on your side, anything is possible. Oh wait, that was someone else. Listen, speaking of head office decisions, there was a big decision made yesterday, and that is the renaming of your fabled Air Canada Center to the Scotiabank Arena.
It's so disquieting, but I'm not outraged. You know, it's not how I felt a long time ago when they took away the glory of the name Maple Leaf Gardens and replaced it with Air Canada Center. But it's, I don't know, I find it disquieting. I thought I would be indifferent about it, but I don't like knowing that banks just rename. I mean, this is what, the second Scotiabank Arena in hockey,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's there's the Scotiabank Saddle Dome out in Calgary. And if you look at it, back in what, early 2000s, 2002... the Leafs' payroll was about $75 million back in the Lindros era, I think, and Brian Leetch and stuff like that. And here we are today, some 15 years later, and their payroll is about $75 million, you know, thanks to the cap system that the NHL has in place. And now with this arena deal, $800 million over 20 years, $40 million a year, going
to,
mind you, this is going to MLS and E. However, let's just say they're going to take a quarter of it. So $10 million of those sponsored naming rights arena dollars could easily cover part, a good chunk, over 12.5% of the Leafs' salary. The Leafs are making money hand over fist, and they just got extra money to help pay for their salary, which is essentially the same as it was 15 years ago. And you're telling me that their revenues have probably, I would safe to say that it's about, what, 10 times more than it was back in 2002? Oh, man, there's a lot of money flying around there.
That's astonishing, especially because you and I both know that it's not a problem filling seats and having people buying your merchandise and subscribing to everything that you know the parent company owns. My concern is why these names can't be more creative. I mean, that's just terrible. It's a big five bank that now owns the naming rights to the place that will create new memories for a new generation of fans.
So will it be called like the Vault on Bay or the Bank on Bay? Like, is there going to be a cool name for it? Like, there used to be the Hangar for the Air Canada Centre, right?
What was interesting to me about the ACC was that, if you think about it, the team was successful when they changed the name. So for a lot of people who had good, fuzzy, warm memories of the Pat Quinn era, there's a lot to be said for the fact that the ACC wasn't always about, you know, Dion Phaneuf, Phil Kessel, and John Ferguson. But now you look at this situation, it's like the precipice, right? We're at the edge of something new, young, fresh, and exciting. And you're all excited about it, and then they kind of throw that at you. Hey, by the way, next year it's going to be Scotiabank Arena. I don't know. I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about that. Shrug my shoulders, I guess.
Well, I think a lot of your fan base are upset about it, but I think we all have to get used to corporate names for our sporting meccas. And I don't know. It's just, it is what it is. Perhaps in another 20 years it'll go back to the Air Canada Centre.
That's kind of funny you'd say that, because I always believe that when things get a little too modernized, you go through a retro phase. So who knows? Maybe in 10, 15 years, corporatism will look a little bit different, and it won't be just about gobbling up naming rights. It's kind of funny, isn't it, that they signed a 20-year agreement, but there's no way it's going to last a full 20 years, just like an athlete's contract, right? They'll probably switch hands at some point or another, given what kind of a hot ticket the Maple Leafs are going to be in the years to come.
I wonder if Scotiabank knew that when they lost Ottawa that they were going to bid for the ACC. I'm sure they did.
That's a really great question. What do they not know? They're Scotiabank, right? They're one of the biggest sponsors of hockey. They're everywhere. I guess it was just a matter of time. Air Canada's not doing too many problems on the tarmac, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
You know, I did see something that I thought you would find really intriguing, which was an article on Editor and Leaf about the number one greatest goaltender all time in Toronto Maple Leafs history. And you suspected it, and you were right. It's Johnny Bauer. How do you feel about that?
I think it's a great honor for Johnny. And he's a staple over at ACC. He's at a lot of the games. If Johnny Bauer, a goalie from the 1960s, is your best goaltender of all time, oh, God. Like, what does that mean? The goalies of the 70s, you got Mike Pommettier. And then in the 80s, you got the great Yuri Sirha, Ken Reggett, Alan Bester, Peter Ng. And then, of course, you've got the wonderful Felix Potvin, who helped turn things around for you guys. I think he was number four on the list, which isn't saying much because I believe we did the math, and he is a combined minus 30 lifetime as a Toronto Maple Leaf, and he's number four on your list.
You know, I find it really interesting that for someone who's been spoiled through different generations of elite-caliber goaltending, and it seems like it's been that way every decade, right? 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. You always had that one or two players that clearly were the best at their craft. For you to sit there and give me that devastating critique of the nonsense that the Maple Leafs franchise has had, first of all, I've heard it before. But I tend to look at things a little differently. I say to myself, honoring a man who's still alive today at the age of 92, who started playing hockey when he was 29 years old, and ended up winning four Stanley Cups, granted in a different era, I think there's something cool to be said for the fact that he was chosen. Because you can't choose anyone else. Nobody was either here long enough in a Maple Leaf sweater or did well enough consistently for a fan base to say, well, maybe one exception. You could probably argue Cujo, couldn't you? As much as you get frustrated about that, you could argue that, couldn't you?
No.
Because he was he's like the Kevin
Pillar
of the Maple Leafs, you know?
Cujo never won a major award. He never took the Leafs to the final when they were supposed to. He never took the Red Wings to the final when he was handpicked to take them to the final. He had some good runs with the Oilers, but he never did anything big. No individual awards, nothing. To have Cujo in the same sentence as the great Johnny Bauer, four-time Stanley Cup winner, you know how much value I put into a Stanley Cup champion. Cujo is not a Johnny Bauer. So it's the end of September already. You know, the weather has already gotten significantly cooler, kids are heading back to school in a couple of days, and a lot of people are feeling melancholy about the end of summer. You know, it's the unofficial end of summer, with the official end of summer being about 3 weeks away. I actually heard some good news, that's 2 weeks away. The NHL training camps are opening in 2 short weeks, and a lot of people in Habs land are feeling a lot of doom and gloom about the upcoming season, and it's been pretty easy to pick on Marc Bergevin for the moves that he did or did not make. But I'm going to take a different spin on it and take a look at the positive things that I'm actually looking forward to this coming training camp for the Montreal Canadiens. I'm looking forward to seeing Jonathan Drouin in a Habs jersey. Really looking forward to the creativity that he brings to the roster and the skill that Montreal so dearly needs. I'm looking forward to seeing if the off-ice relationship that's been developing between Drouin and Max Pacioretty can develop into on-ice chemistry. That's really going to be something to watch. I'm looking forward to seeing a newly re-signed and fully healthy Alex Galchenyuk. We really need him to be healthy, and before he was healthy last year, he was on quite a tear. A lot of people forget that. I'm looking forward to seeing Claude Julien have a full training camp to instill his systems with the club. That's going to make a huge difference. You know, and with all this new look to look forward to, there's actually some same old to actually look forward to. If the Habs can get the same old Carey Price, if the Habs can get the same old Shea Weber, there may not be all that doom and gloom that so many in Habs land are fearing. You know, there actually may be some good things to look forward to this training camp.
You know, I have to say, if you're looking forward to this season and you're a fan of the Toronto Maple Leafs, how can you not be thrilled beyond belief that you have Frederik Andersen as your number one starting goaltender? I mean, think about it. This franchise and all of its storied history and all the vaunted things that we've been told about in the past, recently named the number one greatest goaltender of all time on an Editor and Leaf poll as Johnny Bauer. Now look, I'm a huge fan of Johnny Bauer, and there's something truly potently nostalgic in seeing him at a Maple Leafs game. But when you consider his era, and those who are in their 70s will probably just be able to remember it, George Hainsworth, Turk Baroda, Harry Lumley, and Johnny Bauer, these were all old-school pre-expansion superstars. But if you look at the history of this franchise, it's no surprise that in the time that it's taken to struggle with not being able to win a Stanley Cup in the last half century, it comes as no surprise that it's because of the kind of goaltending that we saw in every decade. I mean, let's do a quick overview. In the 70s, you've got a well past his prime Jacques Plante and an absolutely insane Mike Palmateer standing on his head in order to keep those Sittler and McDonald teams afloat. Then you walk into the 80s, and suddenly the team roster always seems to feature 4 to 5 different goaltenders, and they're all equally as mediocre. With apologies to Ken Reggett and Alan Bester for being a duo that I grew up with, you had names like Jeff Reese and Peter Ng and Damian Rhodes, and who can forget a beautifully decorated and largely ineffective Grant Fuhr. And then you've got Felix Poppin in the 90s, during that back-to-back conference run that made everybody feel that there's a reason to think highly of the future. But again, after 4 years of Felix Poppin, and then an era featuring Curtis Joseph and an incredible Ed Belfour, the descent then continued with goaltending mediocrity well into the 2000s. And between names like Andrew Raycroft and Vesa Toskala and Jean-Sébastien Giguère and Jonas Gustafsson and Ben Scrivens and Jonathan Bernier and everybody's favorite whipping boy James Reimer, it comes as a decided breath of fresh air for Toronto Maple Leafs fans that this year you have a legitimate reason to feel optimistic and proud about who your starting goaltender is, Mr. Freddie Andersen. You know, Kamal, I just opened the window literally in this virtual reality we call social media, and I just happened to find a really good friend of the show who's on with us, Colin Teske from the Fan 590, sportscaster, sports journalist, sports guru. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing well, doing well.
Doing great.
Listen, we're thrilled you could stop by and visit with us. As always, we value the relationships we have in this city, in this industry, and across hockey all over North America. And I know for a fact that being a hardcore hockey millennial, you've probably got your own select thoughts about this upcoming Maple Leafs and Canadian season. Give me what's on the top of your head these days as we hit September the 1st and look forward to this awesome season of NHL hockey.
Well, it's what can Auston Matthews do as a follow-up to last year. When you look back at all the great rookies and you look at, like, Sidney Crosby, John Tavares, and all those people, look at the way Auston Matthews had to perform in the biggest hockey media market in the world and try to tell me how on earth he is going to improve and do it again, because he was simply phenomenal last year, exceeded all expectations. Now with the microscope a little bit more on this team, more expectations, I want to see what Matthews, Marner, and Nylander are able to do in their sophomore seasons. I also look at the Montreal Canadiens, and I think there's no more interesting team coming into the season. I don't know if they got better. I don't know if they got worse. But they were certainly interesting over the offseason, getting Jonathan Drouin, but letting Radulov and Markov go. I wonder if this will actually pan out for them. So those are two really interesting storylines for me going into the season.
Colin, with you being the voice of the Peterborough Petes and us doing a podcast based on the Toronto Maple Leafs and Montreal Canadiens, one thing that I notice is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of Leafs or Habs representation on the Petes. Is that, could that be attributed to anything that Peterborough is doing?
I don't know if it's really necessarily what Peterborough is doing, but I look at both what the Maple Leafs have been able to do in the last couple of drafts. They certainly are looking more to the Ontario Hockey League with the addition of a guy like Kyle Dubas and, of course, Mark Hunter. I mean, they had their fingerprints all over the Ontario Hockey League, and I don't have to point to this, but Don Cherry would often rip the Maple Leafs for never drafting Ontario lads. That was his big gripe. They've started to do that a little bit more. You're seeing it with guys like Travis Dermott, who is an excellent blue liner that they got from Erie. They do have one Pete player that is on the Maple Leafs team right now. He shouldn't be, I don't think he'll crack their AHL team this year, but his name is Nikita Korostalev. And they got him in the seventh round a couple years ago. And this is why I'm nervous about the Maple Leafs and what they could do. They got this guy in the seventh round, and he led the Petes in scoring last year. If they're hitting on picks in the seventh round and finding gems later in the draft, this is going to be a team that's not only good now, but I think good for a very long time, because we've seen it. The Edmonton Oilers had a lot of top five picks, but were brutal for about a decade because they could never hit on picks outside the first round. When you start to hit through rounds 2 and 7, that's where you start to get really, really good and stay consistent. Leafs have done a really good job at that, but I really like what the Leafs have done the last 3 years in terms of prospects, whether they're picking from guys in Peterborough or guys in the Ontario Hockey League. They're finding gems all over the world right now.
Yeah, and just a fun fact, the last Montreal Canadian Peterborough Pete draft pick was in 2008, and it was a goaltender by the name of Jason Messian. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
That name sounds a bit familiar. Okay.
Yeah, and he's now playing in France, and that was from the 2008 draft, or as Ari fondly recalls it, as the Luke Shen draft.
I don't think we need to discuss those. Actually, you know what? Let's mention them, because if memory serves correctly, there's a little guy named James Van Riemsdyk who's here as a result of Luke Shen. Could you say, Colin, that he is their best tradable asset as it's set today going into training camp, JVR?
I think he is. And look, I love James Van Riemsdyk. I think they got him at a great price from the Philadelphia Flyers organization. Not only is he big and physical, but got pretty good hands as well. But I look at his contract, and I look at who they're going to have to pay the next number of years. Marner, Matthews, Nylander are going to want healthy raises. And I look at that blue line, and I just see it still being very thin and in the bottom of the National Hockey League. And one guy that's going to garner, I think, a lot of interest is going to be a guy like James Van Riemsdyk. So if I'm the Maple Leafs, I don't want to part with a good player like that and deal from a position of strength, but in the National Hockey League now, you don't see teams getting fleeced in trades. They have too much analytics. They have too many eyes in the sky watching every team. They know what all the best players are or who they are. So I don't think the Leafs are going to be able to, you know, trade a third or fourth line guy to get that top four defenseman. You're going to have to give up a guy like James Van Riemsdyk. Entering the year, I think he's the number one trade chip, and I don't think he's going to be a Maple Leaf long term.
Colin, do you think that perhaps the Leafs might be looking at the Pittsburgh Penguins model, maybe really going heavy on the offensive side with more of a mobile defense and an adequate amount of goaltending? You think that might be their plan?
I think it's a model that a lot of teams are going to look at. Every time a team wins a Stanley Cup, and not only win a Stanley Cup, but win back-to-back, there's going to be copycats. But I look at that Pittsburgh blue line, and I think they were very underrated. I think Brian Dumoulin is a great defenseman that not a lot of people know about. You don't get to watch him that much. I thought he was really, really good. Of course, you know about Chris Letang. So I think their blue line is pretty good, and people don't give them enough credit, but I still think it's a very dangerous road to go down. Like, as much as I love the Pittsburgh model and how they were able to build three really good forward lines that could score at will and not necessarily need one or two good shutdown defensemen. I just don't see that model being successful going forward. We saw a team like the Ottawa Senators nearly shut them down in the Eastern Conference Final because they had good defensemen 1 through 6, and that was a big strength of their team. So I know they won 2 Stanley Cups in a row, but I don't think that's really the way Mike Babcock wants to build his teams, and I still think they're going to go out and try to find a defenseman that can maybe eat up 20 or 25 minutes. I still think Morgan Riley has room to develop. They got great, great output last year from a guy like Jake Gardner, but they still need some work, defensemen 2 through 6, and they still need to address that, I think, if they want to be considered legitimate.
Colin Teske visiting with HVL. Tell our listening audience, Colin, where they can find you on social media and what you've been up to.
You can follow me at my new Twitter handle, at Teske Radio. I'm also the host and creator of the Good, the Bad, the Teske podcast. I go over the three biggest sports stories of the week. I have guests on from around the sporting world, including guys like James Duffy and former New York Giants running back Tiki Barber. So you can look for that. I always post my show once a week. You can find it there at Teske Radio. You can also hear me on the Fan 590 on weekends. I'm usually doing update shifts all across the network, Saturday, Sunday. So you can look for me there on 590 The Fan on weekends down in Toronto.
His name is Colin Teske. You've been listening to him on the Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan podcast. Thanks for coming out, Colin.
At any time, whatever you guys need, reach out to me and I'll make it happen.